Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
I gotta let this play for just a little while.
I was gonna say, don't turn. I was enjoying that.
It's Billy Vaughn and Swingin' Safari.
I remember this.
I love this song. Welcome to another Thursday night here. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host, and I'm in studio tonight with my part-time co-host, Russ Avison.
Hello there, Lur.
Hello.
Hey, you know, in the very beginning, I was listening. They said you're listening to LA Talk Radio, irreverent and cool.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's us.
That's exactly right. Totally us. It is totally us. Amazingly enough. How you been?
I'm good. I've been a little harried because Karen's out of town. She's
right.
In Tennessee. And
right.
So I've had to take her job and my job.
Right, right.
And anybody else's job that doesn't want to show up for work. It's been interesting week.
Being a business owner sucks, doesn't it?
No, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
No?
Nope. No.
I have a Bella story for you.
Go, please.
Well, I sent you the picture,
yes,
of the svelte Bella.
I was going to say her new shape.
She looks amazing.
Yes, she does.
Even our housekeeper mentioned yesterday. She goes, Bella, you've lost weight.
And what was Bella's response?
She went,
give me a cookie.
Cookie. Carrot.
Oh,
she
carrot,
gets,
yeah,
carrots now. But, you know, I meant to tell you this a while back, but Bella has this thing. She'll come in, she'll sit in front of you and stare. And you don't know what she wants until it dawns on you what she wants. And so you look at her and say, Bella, would you like some peanut butter? And she'll look at you, and I'll get up and I'll say, get your Kong and bring it in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I'm in the kitchen. I turn around. There is my dog standing there with a red Kong in her mouth.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow.
And then she takes it and shows you where you want. She wants you to put it down.
You know, I know people who don't have dogs,
right,
think, oh, yeah, right, right. But this stuff is really true. There's so much about the dogs. In fact, there was a woman, Irene Pepperberg. She
well,
is a yeah, that's a great name, huh? Anyway, she's a behaviorist, and she did a lot of work with African gray parrots. And in particular, she had one named Alex that she wrote a book about. Alex was so smart. You talk about, you know, you say to Bella, do you want peanut butter?
Uh-huh.
This parrot would say to her, want corn. And if she went over and got a piece of banana and gave it to the parrot,
right,
the parrot would throw it on the ground and say, no, want corn.
Want corn.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable what they can do.
Yeah, animals are not as stupid as people let on.
Actually, you know, they're probably not as stupid as most people.
I used to own horses, and I used to hear, you know, a horse is the dumbest animal, you know, next to my brother-in-law.
I was going to say next to writers.
Yeah, no, horses are far from being stupid. They're extremely smart animals, and they know what they want, and they know how to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they're mad, then you wind up with a broken foot or a couple broken toes.
Actually, you know, there's a lot to be said for intelligence if you say they know what they want and they know how to get it.
Yeah.
In life, isn't that what it's all about?
That's what it is all
about.
So
maybe they're very smart there.
There you go. Well, you know what? The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books, and we're there for the new writer, the new author. And if you don't know how to format or get your book out to the market or get it printed and get one on your shelf, we can help you do that. It's an easy, simple process, not real expensive. And if you're looking to have that happen, give us a call at 805-795-3165. And we'll be happy to go into that for you. And Tuscany Bay Books, re-release of the first two books of the Jack Del Rio series, Betrayals and Reservations, as well as the release of the third and final book in the series, Endgame, will be available all on Monday, October 30th. And you can do advanced sales on Amazon or go directly to Amazon and pick some up. And if you haven't read any Jack Del Rio stuff, it's really, really, really good. It's by Richard Polinelli, and he's just a great writer. Besides that, he's part of Tuscany Bay Books. Okay. Moving on.
And did he pay you for that plug?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay.
He did not. He's my business partner. Okay, here's Out West is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.scvoutwest.com. And you can call their toll-free number at 877-340-9378. And if you enter code WB100, you can receive $10 off of your order. And also for their concert series, which tomorrow night is the last one, under Out West. And that is Almeda Bradshaw, and the bookie and I are going to go see that one. That number there, direct line, is 661-347-9700. It's $25 a ticket, and if you mention the Writer's Block, I think they knock like $5 off. And if you
mention Jim in the Writer's Block, Jim will pay for it.
Yeah, no, that won't be happening. And I don't know if they have tickets left. I think they do. I'm not sure, but we'll call them and find out. Again, that number is 661-347-9700. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service. TFM Truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski or any of the fine Target TFM staff. Tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible, is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry, bar none. So call today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Give them a call or go on their website today. You won't be disappointed. I can almost guarantee you. Okay, let's get into our guest for this evening. Are you ready, Russ?
I am.
Okay. Well, I heard you were born ready. Speaking of being born ready, our guest tonight is a young lady from Kansas City native, Rochelle Wisoff Fields. She is a woman of Jewish descent, the granddaughter of Eastern European immigrants, whose close personal connection to Jewish history is a recurring theme throughout much of her writing. Growing up, she was heavily influenced by Shalom Aleichem story. I have no idea how to pronounce that. I have no idea.
She'll help you.
I'm sure she will. I could do it Italian, but I can't do it. As well as Fiddler on the Roof. Her novels, Please Say Kiddush for Me, From Silt and Ashes, were born of her desire to share the darker side of these beloved tales. The history can be difficult to view, much less embrace. Before becoming an author, Rochelle attended Kansas City Art Institute. I'm going to leave it right there because we will be talking about her art later on in the book or in the show. Her short story, Savant, was published in Voices, Volume 3. She's got several short stories in fact, one that is a collection of her own, which is This, That, and Sometimes the Other, High Heel Press. She is currently working or has finished and published now the third in her series, As One Must, One Can. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Rochelle Wisoff Fields. Rochelle, are you with us?
I am.
Yay, that was quite an introduction.
Hey, well, I meant to say also that you are a recurring guest, and actually the last time you were on, Russ was on with you as well.
Right, and I got to be in the studio last time.
Yes, and we miss you. Your chair is empty. And it's cold.
At least I can imagine your faces. And before I forget,
I'm sorry.
Say hi to the bookie.
Yeah. Oh, the bookie. Yeah. She told me.
Say hi to the bookie for me.
Before I left tonight, she made sure I was gentle with you. So I'll be gentle with you.
Okay. She's my friend.
I know. She's mine too. And she's Russ's.
That's good.
Yeah.
Also,
yes.
Corrections on the word. Please say Kaddish. And Shalom Aleichem.
Okay. Now, I have a question on that word, Kaddish. whatever. The reason I have a question is because our engineer is from Israel.
Aha.
And he says it's Kaddish. So that is the Israeli way of pronouncing it. I'm sorry?
I had this discussion with an Israeli friend of mine. There are two ways to pronounce it. There are two strains of Hebrew. There's Ashkenazic, which is what the Eastern European Jews spoke, or they didn't exactly speak it. It was in the prayer book. So in that strain of Hebrew, it was Kaddish.
Okay.
Now, the Israelis speak Sephardic Hebrew. And in that case, it is Kaddish.
Right.
So when someone says, how do I pronounce it, Kaddish or Kaddish, I say yes.
Good answer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I feel corrected now. Well, to some degree. Anyway. Your books, we talked about Please Say Kaddish for me your last trip in here, and spoke about your main characters and the pogroms that went on in Russia and up to and including the last big one that was state sponsored in 1903. Then of course your second book, which I will tell you up front, I did not read. I didn't read it, Rochelle. I'm sorry. That's from Silk and Ashes, and that follows the same family in their push from Russia into the United States, and some immigrated into England, and they kind of like wound up all over the place. Now that is correct. Am I right?
That is correct.
Okay, and it introduced a whole bunch of new characters of which I had no idea existed. Then I got to your third book. Okay, now, as one must, one can. So, as I'm sitting here reading, of course, the book opens in 1945, right after World War II. We get to see the heroine of Please Say Kaddish for me, and of course, it's Silt and Ashes. And she is now a grandmother. She's in her, I believe, 60s. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're correct.
Okay, and she's telling her grandchildren of when she had to run through the snow all night, running away from the Cossacks that were killing her family, and she wound up at the synagogue and lost a third of her foot, and then the story picks up on chapter one in October of 1907.
Correct.
After the immigration, and I assume at that point they'd been in the United States for, 2 years? Something like that, a year?
Hava and her family that came over in 1903, they'd been here for about 4 years by then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so...
But then the children, who were orphaned twice...
Right.
Hava and Arl adopt them. And so a lot of it is their story and how they blend.
Well, I have to say that as I told you with your first book, Please Say Kaddish for Me, I really liked the story. The story really, really, really rang true. And I applaud you. In fact, I will applaud you.
Thank you, David.
There you go. Okay.
Boy, you worked hard to get to that point.
I did. God, it took me a long time. 5 minutes to get there. But I also will say that if you read the books, if you start out with Please Say Kaddish for Me, you have to go and you have to read all three in sequence. The mistake I made, as I said earlier, is that I did not read the second book. And there, like I said, there was characters that popped up in this last book that I had no idea who they were, as one must, one can. I was going crazy trying to figure out who all these people were and keep it straight. And I finally resorted to like almost having to write a menu, you know, the cast of characters to figure out who everybody was and what they were doing. So, but that would be the only problem you have with your books. Otherwise, they're a fun read. And they're not actually a fun read, but they are extremely true to form, true to fiction, or true to life. And I, as I told you earlier when you were on our show before, I strongly suspect this is partly about your family.
Well, it's the part that is not exactly documented. Mm. I started out trying to write about my family, my grandfather specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew one or two things about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came over from Poland, according to my mother, with the shirt on his back. He was 19. He taught himself to be a tailor.
Mm-hmm.
And a cousin told me that he slept under park benches in Central Park because he didn't have anybody in New York. And he hitchhiked to the Midwest.
Wow.
And that's really all I know. And he was not a warm, fuzzy type of person. So I didn't... It never occurred to me to ask him the questions until he was gone, and it was too late.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, Rochelle. That I mean, this is something that I don't know, and possibly you do, because you've had infinitely more experience with this than I have. I've known Jewish people my whole life, but I've never gotten the history of their families, and I've never, you know, I understand that. As I researched the last pogrom in 1903, I never realized there were so many Russian Jews that left Russia and came to the United States. Well, actually, filtered throughout the world. But a lot of them came here, and I was not aware that there were so many that came into the United States. Can you speak to that at least a little bit?
Well, I mean, from a personal standpoint, you know, we've been doing a lot of genealogy on Ancestry.com, and I knew that 3 out of 4 of my grandparents were Russian immigrants, and just found out that all 4 of them were.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what part of Russia they came from?
Well, my grandmother, I'm told, probably came from Belarus, because that was the Jewish part of Russia, the country. But, you know, the Russian Empire encompassed that whole Pale of Settlement. So my maternal grandparents both came from Poland, and my paternal grandfather came from Lithuania.
Now there was a part. The reason I'm asking is because my father's parents both came from, and it was either Russia that became part of Poland or Poland that became part of Russia. But they immigrated to the United States, I think, right in maybe 1915, right around there.
Hmm.
Well, that's interesting, because I remember my mother telling me that my grandfather came from a part of Poland that kept going back and forth from Russia to Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. So they probably came from about the same area.
Mm-hmm. That could be. I found it interesting that towards the end of your book, you have a little memory of Ava going through Ellis Island, and she was being harassed by one of the people at Ellis Island, and I can't help but thinking that she was probably not the only one that was harassed, and the way
it was common.
Oh, and the way she was being harassed was like, oh, you got to get back in line. You got to get back to the end of the line now, because you didn't have what you're supposed to have, and you lost it. It's too bad. It's not my fault. Get back to the end of the line. And I just thought,
oh, yes.
Wow. You know, because my grandparents came through Ellis Island, and of course not from Russia, but, you know, a little further south, Irish,
yeah,
you know, Mediterranean Irish.
Yeah, they were not treated very nicely, especially the ones who were not English speakers, and they were cheated out of life savings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the concessionaires traded them shiny pennies.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And they didn't understand the language. So.
Right, right. And they were easily screwed. Let's just put, you know, call a spade a spade. They were just very easily screwed and messed with, because they didn't understand what the people were saying. Sure. A little bit about your book, and explain, if you would, to our listeners, because the story is takes so many turns, and it goes up and down, and it goes over here and talks about this nephew and cousin and brother, and then it goes back over here and talks about 2 kids that have been orphaned, and then it comes back over here and talks about a blind daughter. Can you kind of put that together for our audience and kind of give them an idea about as one must, one can? I know the phrase came from her grandmother that used to tell her, as one must, one can, that was at the end of your second book. Can you kind of go through the story a little bit with our audience and kind of give them an idea what was going on in that book?
Okay, well, in the first book, Kava, or the second book, Kava had German measles. And so her daughter was born blind.
Right.
And so the little girl is also a musical prodigy. And very little spitfire, really. And then the orphans, I mean, they've all kind of blended as a family. And I'm a little bit distressed because I thought I was working hard to make this a standalone. I mean, I realize I have a lot of characters. So I tried to put in enough backstory to where it worked, you mm-hmm. know, to where mm-hmm. you could follow it. So I apologize if it didn't work for you.
No. It worked just fine. I just didn't know who a lot of the characters were.
But yeah, of course, okay. I got that from people in the first book, too. Because you know, and this is me. You know, they say, write the kind of book that you want to read.
Sure.
Well, I mean, I read Ahab's Wife last year. Mm-hmm. It took me 6 months to get through it, but I loved it. It had twists and turns and so many characters, and I was having trouble keeping them straight, but I'm loving every minute of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but the orphans, the three children, Reuven and Lev and Bela, were orphaned in the first book when the parents both died, and then were taken under the wing of their oldest sister and brother-in-law.
All right.
And who has moved them to Odessa, where they are wiped out except for these three children in the pogrom of 1905 in Odessa.
All right.
So Hava and Arl adopt them. So when the story opens up, and as one must, one can, they're all living under one roof.
Right, right.
So those three children have become hers.
Right. And Hava's having a hard time rotating around.
Right, because her disability is becoming increasingly worse.
Correct.
Which we call that. That disorder, it was called causalgia back then, and that's mm-hmm. what I call it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's now called complex regional pain syndrome, and there's no cure for it.
Right. It just gets worse.
Right.
Yeah, I noticed. And at one point, the doctor came and gave her shots of morphine just to ease her pain enough for her to be able to move around. So.
Right.
Yeah. And you
pretty much how they.
Uh-huh. You had a really, really cool little thing in there that it played twice in the book, and once, I guess, it took place in 1907 maybe, or 05 or 06, and then again in December of 1908, and when they got to go visit Teddy Roosevelt in the White House.
Right. I debated over that, and I thought, it just seemed right, because he's the one that paid her train fare in the first book. And,
right.
Of course, that snippet at Ellis Island is a rerun from the first book.
Yeah. It's,
so I did have a lot of fun with that part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you couldn't have put a better character in there, because old Teddy was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like to exhume him and resurrect him and collect him.
I know, huh? and he was quite the person who loved to help people. That was his big deal. And he had like four or five kids of his own, and had all kinds of hardships in his life as well. So I think he understood it.
Oh, he did. And I mean, I could see him connecting with Hava, who was this feisty little woman who learned the language before she came over so she wouldn't be cheated.
Right.
And he was the one that tried to get the Tsar to denounce the pogrom in Kishinev. And, of course, the Tsar wouldn't denounce
right.
it because he was behind it.
Right, right. And which lent the phrase that, you know, there's no good people in this world. They're all the same. You know, the bad guys, the Hitlers and Tsar Nicholas,
right.
were all, you know, struck from the same cloth. Which I
exactly.
thought it was a pretty good comment, you know, especially for today.
I was going to say, just as you were talking about that, I was thinking it's not a lot of it's not a lot of difference from that what we have now.
No,
and the climate that is being perpetuated now in the United States is very similar to this.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, it's gone
terrifying.
Backwards. We've gone backwards, and it's really it's unfortunate. So anyway, I say that because you know what that means. As one must, yeah. One can is now available on Amazon under a 2016, I believe it became available. And is that correct?
Right.
So all three books are now.
It's not the end of the year. Huh?
All three books are now available.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about paintbrushes and paintings and...
okay.
You attended the Kansas City Art Institute, and you studied painting and lithography, which is interesting. Your preferred media were pen and ink, pencil and watercolor, which you use in your book covers, which you can tell that they're hand-done. Character studies will be used in her upcoming companion coffee table book for the series, A Stone for the Journey. So you sent over some copies of your paintings, and they're quite interesting, I have to say.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
And I'm not an artist. The bookie is, but...
I know.
I am not, and I always appreciate somebody who's got that kind of talent, of which I don't have. And you sent over five very intriguing... but you mentioned a painting in your book, As One Must, One Can, about a woman holding a teddy bear. And I was hoping you were going to send that, but you didn't.
Oh, okay.
Do you know which one I'm talking about? I don't have the book with me. Otherwise, I would have found it.
I was going to say, I don't remember. I mean, I have a picture of Rachel holding a teddy bear.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe it's Rachel holding the teddy bear.
Right, and she's about three in that picture.
Right, and playing the piano like a maestro.
Right.
Little brat. So you got interested in art, and that was, obviously, that was your first love.
It was. I mean, the writing came much later.
Sure.
My mother used to complain that she could never find a clean piece of paper in the house, because from the time I can remember, I would draw on it.
Uh-huh.
You know? Plain sheet of paper is a challenge. Come draw on me.
Yeah. Well, my mother used to do it. All I did was scribble on mine, because I'm not an artist.
and his scribblings are not for mixed company.
That's what I do now. I used to play office, you know, and scribble, 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 throw a paper on the side and scribble, scribble, scribble. You know, my mother would get so mad, you know, a whole ream of typing paper and it'd be all gone. Scribbles on it and thrown aside. Go ahead.
Okay, you're going to ask a question. We keep sort of colliding here.
Well, you know, that's the problem with being on telephone.
I know.
So, it's just...
I'd much rather be there.
Well, I would much rather you be here. Well, we'll muddle through it, though. That's what Russ and I do. We muddle through.
That's good.
Yeah. You also picked up an art of painting on piano rolls. Please explain.
A lady at my synagogue came up with this idea, and she wanted a picture of the Messiah on the scroll, and she had picked up just a whole load of piano scrolls. And I said, well, it's a great idea. I was a little afraid. I didn't know how paint would adhere to it. And I thought, well, okay, let me try it. She gave me a bunch of them. She says, practice on them, and this is the one I want. And the paint adhered beautifully to it.
Hmm.
And I mean, the sepia, I used sepia on it, and since then I've done two other scrolls as birthday presents for my son and his wife.
Hmm.
I did pictures of them playing the piano.
Oh, wow.
They thought they were very cool. So I've got some more piano scrolls, and I thought, well, why not?
What kind of material are piano scrolls made out of?
They're almost a parchment
like
paper.
Like a vellum, I'll bet.
Yeah. And the hard part for me with those was getting a work surface so that it wasn't rolling across the floor.
I can see you chasing it with your paintbrush.
And you're so little. I mean, you see it scurrying across the floor. Come back here. The cat grabbing it, take it out of the living room.
Like that.
So it's
kind of a sideline that is opening up.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Someone had suggested to me, I had, you know, three portfolios full of illustrations that I've been working on for this coffee table book.
Mm-hmm.
And someone suggested that I get into with a festival called Corks and Canvas that was wine and art.
Sounds like a good mix.
Sounds like a good mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was. My husband had a great time, let me tell you.
I'll bet.
He went out and got a purple tent, because that's my theme, and tables and the grid wall, and we had prints made and matted and framed. And the books and the paintings sold each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that first fair, we made back all of the money we'd spent on equipment.
Wow. That's excellent, so actually.
I have a question.
We did a couple.
I have a question about some of these paintings I'm looking at here. And I don't know if you remember which ones you sent. But first of all, I was going to say that there's one where there's two gentlemen sitting in an old car.
And
it looks like a Model T or something like this, maybe a little more current. But I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Reavers with Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah, great.
That reminded me of The Reavers.
Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, but one thing I noticed is that all of the characters, at least in the five paintings that you sent us, we don't see any eyes. Their eyes, they're either squinting or they're covered. Is that something you do on purpose, or is that just the luck of the draw with these five paintings?
I think that's the luck of the draw with those five paintings.
Oh, okay. Because I just thought it was kind of interesting.
What I found interesting...
Yeah, and it is a 1905 Buick.
Hmm. Okay, there you go.
And I sweat bullets over that.
Which required a crank in the front, actually.
Yeah.
What I found interesting was the one where the young lady is standing looking at the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Liberty, she's holding her tablet, and she's flipping the bird. I'm lying. But you know what, Rochelle? You're the first one to figure it out. And nobody would have noticed it. It would have been great.
You almost had me running for my pictures, and they're all loaded up in the car.
Well, now you're going to have to change it.
And the caption could have read, "Welcome to America, Mr. Trump."
Yeah, welcome to America. Yeah.
Personally, I think you're pulling my leg.
Well, of course we are. But that's part of the fun being on the show. We get to pull your leg. It'd be a lot more fun if you were sitting in here, but you're not, so we have to do it on the phone.
I know.
Rochelle, a little bit of a serious question. Jim and I were touching on this earlier before we came on the air, and that, you know, in this country, there have always, well, in the world, but in this country, we have always had different groups that have been persecuted for one reason or another. And so many times you can see the reason. I mean, because there'll be a general feeling like, you know, one group is persecuted because, oh, yeah, well, they don't work and they all do drugs. And another group is, you know, they're all drunk all the time. But when you look at the persecution of the Jews, and I come from, my family is, from my dad's side of the family is Jewish. Where do you see the reasoning for this? You know, it's not like you can say, oh, the Jews are lazy, or the Jews, I mean, there's nothing there other than what I thought is maybe that it's a jealousy because they were always connected with success in business.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any insight into that at all?
I think I may have a little bit of an insight before you start, Rochelle. I think a lot of it has to do with back in biblical times when the money changers and stuff were in the temples, and of course then we had the Christ walking through and dumping all the money, and you know it was a problem, and it became a problem because then I think the Jewish people in the Sanhedrin became affiliated with money. And I just grew over the years. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, pulling out of my, you know, but it might be.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. Although Jesus himself was a Jew.
Right.
It was, I think in that instance, it was more a matter of when and how they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was in the temple.
Right.
And it was probably on the Sabbath.
Right.
And it's like, you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
And but then, like in medieval times, the times of the plague, the Jews didn't die off like everyone else because of their laws of cleanliness. And other people looked at them like that was satanic, and they were responsible for the plague.
When in actuality, it was rats and fleas.
Right.
Okay,
but
so
because the Jewish people had their dietary laws,
right,
and their cleanliness,
right,
they didn't die as often.
Well, yeah, there you go.
All right, so now fast forward to today, and still, I mean, is it because they run Hollywood? No, but I'm seriously...
Wall Street?
Yeah, I mean, what is the reasoning behind it? Because it's still happening.
It's the lies, and you can... you know, there are those of us who do believe there is something spiritual to that. That at the expense of sounding arrogant, we're God's chosen, and as Tevye said, couldn't once in a while you choose someone else? But
like during Kristallnacht in 1938 in Germany, please pick on somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, my mind just went blank. I thought of a song line, but it's not coming out.
Ah.
That Tom Lehrer did years and years ago, if you remember him. From That Was the Week That Was.
Oh, sure, sure.
And,
oh, God,
and,
that's really
he had
going
a song called National Brotherhood Week. And it says, Lena Horne and Sheriff Clark are dancing cheek to cheek. And it went on to say, you know, that everybody hates the Jews. It's like, terrific. I don't know. It scares me. You know, when I see Jewish cemeteries being desecrated, and we had a shooting a couple of years ago at a Jewish community center here. And some guy went crazy, wanted to kill Jews. He killed 3 people, and none of them were Jews.
Bad aim?
I don't know if I answered your question.
Probably as best as anybody could at that point.
Yeah. But,
so it
is frightening. And I mean, anymore, it's like everybody is snarking at everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's
nobody's
horrible.
Nobody's listening.
No. No. It's like I told Jerry tonight, because she was just getting so pissed off at MSNBC, and I said, you know what? I said, us sitting here, there's nothing we can do because we're the little guys. We maybe have a voice, but it goes to the end of the block, and that's it. But there are people that can do something, but they don't do it. Everybody's keeping
right.
their mouth shut, and for what reason? I don't know.
Self-interest.
But somebody's going to have to start. Well, somebody did. But, you know, of course, as soon as they start saying things, then they get shut down on Twitter. I should pull that off the air, Twitter. Oh my God, I don't even have a Twitter account.
I do, and I think I have like 200 followers on Twitter. I do better on my blog.
There you go.
And I guess that's sort of my social platform. I write about anything and everything, and sometimes I do hit on social injustice, and I do a lot of Jewish stories, a lot of Holocaust stories. And I mentioned to somebody the other day, I said, it makes me wonder if I'm on somebody's hit list.
I don't think so, but I mean, it's nice to think that you might be. No, for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm important enough that I'm on somebody's hit list. You know,
you are, Jim.
I know, and you could go home and tell your friends, "Hey, I'm on somebody's hit list here."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope not. It's not that I want that. But,
right,
you know.
Right. Okay, Rochelle, you have an agent. We won't mention your agent's name on the air, but you have an agent, and we happen to know her.
Yeah.
And publishing, when it comes to publishing, you publish through Argus or WB Books.
WB.
Yes. Would you ever think about, or have you ever thought about independent publishing as a platform for some of your work?
Did you say some of my art?
Some of your work.
Or some
work.
I've thought about it. I think it tends to be a little more expensive. I don't have a lot of cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and really, W&B is an indie publisher.
Yeah. Well, they're the indie side of Argus. Right?
Right.
Okay. So, but you're this is the third book that you've done through W&B.
Right.
Okay.
And the next one will be the fourth.
Okay. Is that your tabletop book?
Right. They asked me to do it.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, he asked if I would be interested in doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, let me think about it for a minute, okay.
That's kind of cool.
So right now, I mean, I've spent the last couple of years compiling pictures, illustrations, and I have probably about 150 paintings.
Wow.
Between the character studies and the color illustration.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I plan to do is take snippets from the three novels and put them together with the pictures. And compiling this is tougher than writing a novel.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. Totally believe that. It's a lot of work. And you don't have do you have a target date on this coffee table book?
Right now I'm shooting for February.
Okay.
Of 2018.
Okay.
The publisher told me, you know, he wanted it a little sooner, and I said, if, you know, I was told February, if I rush it, I said, we're liable to have a product that none of us are happy with.
Right.
And so he said, take as much time as you need.
Well, you kind of have to give him a date that you'd like to see it done.
Right. So February is kind of what I'm shooting for. Okay. And I might even make it.
Well, there you go. Well, you'd be one of the first. Especially the writers we've talked to lately. I understand that Paris Afton Bonds is a friend of yours.
Actually not.
No?
Kathleen Rogers is a friend
yes,
of mine.
Yes, Kathleen, and then Caroline Giamanco as well.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, but you did listen to Paris's show last week.
I did. Well, Kathleen had told me about it, yeah. And I said, well, I have to hear it, because Kathleen looks at Paris as her mentor.
Ah.
And really, I kind of look at Kathleen, even though I had books out, I kind of look up to her.
You know,
she's such a wonderful writer.
Oh, who? Yeah. When I was talking to Paris, as you know, I call all the writers like two or three days before they're on the air. And as I was talking
right.
to Paris the Tuesday before she was on, she goes, "Oh my God, I'm so nervous." I said, what are you nervous about? She goes, being on your show. I said, Paris, you've written 45 novels. You're a New York Times best-selling author. You're a teacher. What have you got to be, you know, scared about being in our little show? And she goes, well, first of all, your show isn't little. And secondly, she goes, I'm always afraid to talk to interviewers. I said, well, we'll read your book. I mean, that's what we do. So she was fun. And Kathleen, of course, is a good friend of the show's. So we love her.
Right.
So anyway, we're going to have to kind of like wrap this up with you, my dear.
Okay.
If you would like to give us where people can find you, up to and including your blog,
yes.
And, of course, your Facebook and your Twitter and email and all that good stuff.
Okay. My email address is runtshell@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
RUNTSHELL.
Mm-hmm.
And if you meet me, you understand why.
Yes. Well, we met you, and we do understand why.
And my blog, if you look for Addicted to Purple, I will pop up.
Yes.
The address for that is RochelleWissoff.com. And that's RochelleWissoff, and it's all one word, .com.
Mm-hmm. And email? Oh, you just did you?
Okay. Was first.
Okay. And Facebook, also, and Twitter.
I am on Facebook. Just look up Rochelle Wissoff Fields, and you will find me. I've got an author page, and my regular yada yada page.
Okay. And of course, if you want to really piss somebody off, go make a comment on @ the real Donald Trump. Oh my God!
I'm biting my tongue.
Not me anymore. Rochelle, thanks for coming on with us again. It's been a hoot as always.
Oh, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And we're looking forward to seeing you and Jan next year.
We're going to try and make it out there. We want to see the grandbaby. So.
Well, good. And the bookie and I want to take you out to dinner when you're here. So we look
Sounds
forward
good.
To it.
We'll take you up on it.
Oh, I hope you do. And maybe we might even talk Russ into coming with us.
Maybe I will.
That would be great.
There you go. Rochelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's time for you to go. Oh, it's always fun, and it's time for you to go to bed now.
Yes, it is. I'm up way past my bedtime.
Yes, you are. Take care, dear. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Rochelle Wissoff Fields.
Yeah. What a she's happy spirit.
She is a little dynamo, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
She's just this little tiny woman.
I know, but bigger men walk in fear from her.
I'd be one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's do this. We got a couple minutes left. Let me go through what's up for the next couple of weeks.
Okay,
and then I'm going to ask you to talk to about a little bit about All Dogs Rule.
Okay.
Of course, tonight was Rochelle Wissoff Fields. She's an author and artist. Her book tonight was As One Must, One Can, available on Amazon.com. Guests for November 2nd is Price Ainsworth. And Price has written a book called A Minor Fall. I have not started it yet, but it looks like it's going to be really, really good. November 9th is Eric Heisner and Al Bringus. We call them the twins. They'll be in here. Eric is, of course, a Western writer, screenplay writer, actor, personality. He's just
everything.
He takes up the entire room when he's here. Eric Heisner and his buddy Al Bringus is his illustrator for his books.
I think he's really his bodyguard.
I think he is too. Actually, yeah. I think he is too. And they sit in here in their cowboy hats and their scarves and their jeans and they talk cowboys, which is kind of cool. And so that is it. We will be dark on the 23rd of November for Thanksgiving, and we'll be back with you the following week. And so, Russ.
Yes, sir.
Talk to me about All Dogs Rule. You have a business in Fillmore.
Yes, All Dogs Rule.
All Dogs Rule.
It is a dog boarding facility that is unique in just about every way. It's cage free. We have 7 dog parks where dogs get to run and play. When they're not in the dog parks, they are in converted barns, and the barns have inside stalls that are about 12 by 15 feet, and then a door that goes to an outside that has a 20 by 30 foot yard, so they run back and forth all day long. And we have staff there 24/7, so the dogs are always tended to, and it's a great place. Most of the dogs don't want to go home. Our tagline is, whose vacation was better?
Yeah. Well, Bella stayed out there for a week.
Yeah. Bella's been
a long
out
time
there.
Ago. She was a little girl.
Yeah, we do pickup and delivery all over Canal Valley and some of the San Fernando Valley and Camarillo and Oxnard, all sorts of places.
But I will tell you that if you're planning on taking your dog out there, be prepared for the hump from hell, because that is one hell of a drive.
If you bring them out there. Well, yeah. A lot of people actually come out because they like the drive. They like getting out of the city.
Yeah, it's on Grant Road, right?
Grand Avenue.
Yeah. Grand Avenue, and it's clear down to the end.
Yep.
And it's on the right, and it's just a big, big old, huge 20-acre parcel.
Yeah, and it's an orange grove. We have 14 acres of Valencia oranges there.
Yeah, and you butt up against the Sespe River.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's a nice place.
Yeah. So, you know, earlier when we started the show, you said, well, or maybe we talked off the air, but you said, you know, sometimes owning your own business is a headache, isn't it? So, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Probably not.
No, it's great.
Well, you know, I'm retired now, so I can say things like
shut
that.
Up.
Okay, that's it for us tonight. We'll be back with you next Thursday here on the Writer's Block at LA Talk Radio. And for Russ Avison, myself, and Bobby Jean, who, of course, is getting ready for her show, which I will be at tomorrow night, which is Almeda Bradshaw. Looking forward to it. That is us. We're going to check out for right now. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.